The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening. You're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 11. I'm your host, Otis Gyre. In tonight's episode, I'll be performing 5 stories for you about voices from beyond the grave, nameless lakes both legendary and lurid, murderous mysteries, the unsettling side of utopia, and derelict dangers, all of them from the dark and twisted imagination of author Dave Stancliffe. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. And thank you for your support. It's time to get started, so lock your doors, turn the lights down low, and settle in. The show is about to begin. Our first tale of terror this evening from Dave Stancliffe is entitled Ghost Radio 3, 2, 1. You're on the air. Hello, folks. Glad you could make it on my broadcast, the Tom Mahon Hour. I've got a lot to talk about tonight, but before we do, I'd like to ask you something. Do you believe in ghosts? The reason I ask is the production crew has been complaining of some wacky things going on in the studio lately. Things disappearing and reappearing again somewhere else. Stuff like that. I gotta tell you right now that I don't believe in ghosts. If you do, call and let me know why, okay? Let's move on to the controversies that are currently surrounding our state legislatures and crime in the local neighborhoods. Hello, caller. This is Tom. What's your name?
Jacob.
Okay, Jacob. What's your beef this evening? I want those young hoodlums to quit walking over my grave. I'm sorry, Jacob. I think we had a bad connection. Did you say someone's walking over your grave? That's right. I'm getting sick of it, and if it doesn't stop, I'm going to have to resort to haunting them and the neighborhood. Oh, boy. They're out tonight. Tom laughed while hanging up on the caller. That's what I like about doing this show, listeners. There's always something new under the sun, or, like in this case, the phone. Stick with me for a minute while our sponsors get their messages across to the Windy City in Chicago. Tom took the opportunity to see what Dexter, the production sound man, wanted. "What's up, Dex?" he asked. "Someone outside wants to see you." "Who?" Tom asked, with real interest. This was not a common event. "Says his name's Jacob." Tom froze. "Guy's a nut. Tell him to leave.
Say you'll call the police. He hurried back to his swivel chair and flipped the mic on, just as the logo music ended for an ad about blood pressure medicine. Back again, callers. I have a hunch it's going to be a long night. Go ahead and sip on something good and share your thoughts. This is Tom Mahan, and I'm listening. The next 40 minutes went by quickly, as people called in to complain about local issues and corrupt politicians. I'll take one more call before calling it a night. Hello, this is Tom. This is Jacob, and I'm not happy with you, Tom. That was pretty rude hanging up on me like that. Tom stared at the mic with growing horror. He didn't like the sound of this guy's voice. I told you, I'm tired, getting tired of people walking all over my grave. You know that empty lot you live by on Elm Street, Tom? Well, that's where I was buried. Things were fine until the developers built your brand new neighborhood around my final resting place. I wanted to stop. Somehow Tom stammered, "You're crazy. Leave me alone." He turned the mic off and sat there, ashen-faced. His heart was beating so fast, he had to take a couple of deep gulps of air. "Hey, Dexter," he shouted at the sound room. "There's a caller named Jacob who's crazy." "Yeah, I know," Dexter said. "I was listening, you know." "Don't ever let him through again." Tom was still shaking when he went outside and got into his car. It would be light soon, and thoughts of Jacob would dissipate during the day. When 5 o'clock rolled around, it was time for Tom to go to bed. He started work at midnight. All he needed was 6 hours of sleep. He woke up with a start. Someone was pounding on his front door. He slipped his robe on, walked out to the living room, and turned the porch light on. Leaving the latch lock in place, he peeked out at the opening. He didn't see anything at first, and started to relax, thinking it was just some kid playing a prank. Then he looked down on the porch. There was a pile of foul-smelling, dark, rich earth spread out covering the tile. It was 10 o'clock, and he decided to stay up. He couldn't sleep now if he wanted. This was getting out of hand, but how could he tell the police that a pile of dirt was a threat? It was the phone call from the night before. Would that be enough? By the time he got to work, he had a pounding headache. It was clear and cold outside. He welcomed the cup of hot coffee Dexter gave him as soon as he entered. "Are we doing open mic night again, or do I have a guest tonight?" he asked eagerly. "No guest. Sorry, it's open mic again." Tom sat in his leather swivel chair and held the hot cup of coffee up to his mouth and inhaled the aroma. Took a couple of aspirin and looked over a list of topics his producer Dan lined up for him. The first hour of phone calls went smoothly with some lively topics. Then Tom's jovial tone stopped abruptly as the caller identified himself as Jacob. He looked over at Dexter with panic and surprise in his eyes. Dexter looked shocked and was shaking his head. "I'm about to lose my patience with you, Tom. You find a way to keep people from walking all over my grave, or you're going to be seeing a lot of me in your dreams. This is your last warning." On the way home from work that morning, he decided to contact the developer, who was an old classmate, and find out what the status of the open lot was. That they were friends was another reason he decided to buy one of his new homes on the newly named Elm Street. "What's that status of that empty lot at the end of my street?" Tom asked. "It's not a full lot. I'm not sure what to do with it." "There's something you should know, Rory. The neighborhood kids have been playing there more frequently, and there's been a couple of injuries. At some point, some angry parent may try to sue you for damages." "Well, I had no idea. Thanks for letting me know, pal. I'll get right on that and put up a fence with warning signs. Can't thank you enough for bringing that to my attention." Tom left, feeling relieved. He hoped the ghost, which he now believed in, would allow time for the fence to go up before haunting him. True to his word, Rory was at the open lot the following day with a work crew, who put up a solid wooden fence around the lot's perimeter. No trespassing signs were all posted. 4 nights later, Tom was feeling normal again. His logic was badly bruised by the experience, but he was glad it turned out well. That night, on open mic, all of his callers were animated and he was enjoying himself. "Hello, this is Tom Mahan. How can I help you?" "My name is Isaac, and a friend of mine referred me to you to get some help." The skin began to crawl on Tom's arms, and the hairs on his neck bristled. "What's your friend's name?" he reluctantly asked. "Jacob. He says you can get people to stop walking all over my grave." Tom's scream reverberated across the airwaves. "And as it stands, you never know what you might hear on the radio."
Our second story this evening is short yet unsettling. Something Dave Stancliffe calls the Ladies of the Lake. The Ladies of the Lake by Dave Stancliffe, performed by Otis Gyrie. Not far from Lake Minnetonka in Minnesota, there's a smaller lake east of that few, if any, tourists have ever seen. The locals say it's haunted by three women and avoid going there. If the lake ever had a name, no one knows what it is now. North of the lake, a 30-mile trek away, is White Earth Lake. A young man born on the Indian reservation that surrounded it desperately wanted to see the world. He was part of the White Earth Ojibwe band and expected to live his whole life there. But the urge to leave coursed through his veins and his blood boiled for adventure. His native name was Nimi. He is dancing. His white name was Roger. In school, everyone had to answer to their white names. Afterwards, the moment they left school, they went by their real names. Nimi was a reader. That's why he was so smart. He absorbed knowledge like a sponge and was able to retain what he learned. He loved mysteries and studied stories that were passed down by the Ojibwe elders. Tales from the ancient days when the people lived in harmony with Mother Earth. One day he had an epiphany. He'd tell his family and friends that he wanted to go on a vision quest. It would give him the reason he needed to leave the reservation, and it could provide direction for his future. He was ready to seek his guardian spirit, who he could call on for protection and guidance. It had been many years since someone in the tribe set out on a sacred vision quest, and the elders were pleased that someone so well schooled in their culture was undertaking it. Although they felt he should be a little older, they agreed to hold the ceremony. When the rising sun kissed White Earth Lake's surface the next morning, Nimi set out on his quest for adventure. He was dressed in leather breeches and a jacket. He wore a pair of beaded moccasins with good luck tokens sewn into them. 2 days and 30 miles later, Nimi came upon the nameless lake. When the locals told him it was haunted, he felt a thrill of excitement. This was a challenge, he decided, and made a crude camp by the lake. That night, he had weird dreams. He was talking with a woman who was promising him crazy things like immortality and the ability to fly, or to stay underwater for as long as he liked without having to breathe air. When he awoke in the morning, his clothes were wet. Not damp, soaking wet. He scrambled to his feet and jumped around, shaking himself dry under the newly arrived sun. Instead of being worried about why he was wet, Nimi recalled the stories the locals told him. He didn't remember anything about water witches, though, just that there were three women who guarded the nameless lake. Unlike most men in his tribe, he didn't fear the unknown. The next night he tried to stay awake, but succumbed to sleep by midnight. His dreams were chaotic and violent. He was flying over the treetops, looking down at herd of buffalo, being chased by hunters with spears and arrows. He could hear the cries of the hunters as they brought a big bull down. The swirling dust made his eyes gritty. The thrill of the chase increased his heartbeat, and then he woke up in his campsite next to the lake. His eyes burned as he looked around. Afterward, he walked along the lake shore, wondering what his dreams meant. As exciting as they were, he longed to know if the lake was really haunted. Thus far, he hadn't seen any ghosts, yet the locals insisted they were there. He'd gone 5 days without food, hoping it would give him a vision. His body was so weakened he quit walking and sat down by the lake, staring out at its shimmering surface with glassy eyes. That night, as he lay barely conscious by the smoldering fire pit in his camp, 3 women came to him. They wore diaphanous dresses that accentuated their lithe bodies as they walked across the lake and on land to his camp. "How much longer before this human dies from lack of food and our nightly bloodletting?" one of the women asked the other two. "It's hard to say, sister. This human has a strong spirit," another one commented. In spite of his condition, Nimi heard the voices and struggled to focus his eyes as they peered down at him. His first thought was they were beautiful. They all had full red lips and pale faces that were expressionless. All 3 had pale blue eyes that watched him struggle to sit up. None of them wanted him to die, at least not until someone else came along. Human blood was the ultimate intoxicant for them. They seldom got visitors because people feared the place. When they did, they tried their best to make the experience last as long as possible before draining the victim's final lifeblood. It had been decades since the last victim stumbled into their domain. Nimi's blood was a special treat after that long drought. In spite of his weakened condition, he recalled a tale one of his elders told him about supernatural beings, that if he could drink their blood, he would be strong enough to banish them to hell where they belonged. Summoning up the last of his strength, he spoke, "Ladies of the lake, I am Nimi, your loyal servant. If you could each give me a little of your blood, I could continue serving you longer instead of dying right now." The 3 were startled by the request and argued among themselves for a while before coming to a decision. When they did, each one used a fingernail to slash their own wrists. "Come, drink then, human," one offered as she held her bloody wrist out. Without hesitation, Nimi sucked on the proffered wrist. When she stepped aside, the second offered hers, and by the time he was sucking on the 3rd's wrist, he felt a hot, powerful surge course through his veins. Night turned to day. He could understand what the animals in the nearby forest were saying. Power incarnate made his bronze face glow. The sisters, sensing something had gone wrong, huddled together and watched his transformation with their pale blue eyes. When he finally turned his attention on them, they could see the mistake they'd made. In their eagerness, they ignored the law of blood. Their mixed blood took him to another level of awareness and power over them. He slowly stretched, never taking his eyes off the 3 women. They turned in fear, as if to go back in the lake, when he clapped his hands together and sent them straight to hell. As it stands, evil is meant to be destroyed by heroes in all cultures. Our 3rd tale tonight is bound to send a chill down your spine. Also from Dave Stancliffe, I present to you Dead Eyes. Detective Bryce Nance left the crime scene after working it for 2 hours. On his way back to the office, he thought about retiring again. He'd been threatening to retire for months. He was tired of waging war with death dealers. His brain was scorched with images of dead eyes and mangled bodies. 30 years in the force now. Was he ready to leave? He wasn't sure he wanted to retire. What would he do? He'd been a cop all his entire adult life. He drove his wife of 30 years nuts if all he had to do was piddle around the house. As he filled out his report later, he thought about the victim, a short Oriental man who had both hands and feet cut off. The coroner said he bled to death from his massive wounds. No other wounds were found on the body. It was the second body this week with the same wounds. Talk of a serial killer made its rounds in local newspapers and news television. When the second murder was announced, the hashtag #HandAndFootPsycho popped up on social media platforms. The chief of police, Dwayne Fitzsimmons, got a call from the mayor, who hated all the coverage the case was getting. Fitzsimmons, in turn, called a meeting with his detectives and rank-and-file cops. When he was done berating his men, he let them go to work. Detective Bryce walked up to him afterward and asked for a minute of his time. When they got to his office and he told them that he was considering retiring, the chief rolled his eyes skyward and pounded his fist on the desk. "You gotta be kidding me, Bryce. You're the best detective we have. You're good for at least 5 more years. Is it a raise? I'll give you a raise." "No, it's not about the money, Chief. I'm tired of seeing dead eyes in my dreams." "Oh, Bryce, me lad. Don't give me that phony Irish accent. I'm serious. Is that the way it is? Then you want to check with your union steward, but you still have 2 years to go before voluntary retirement is possible. Be a terrible thing to lose all those years of service because I'm out of here." Chief Fitzsimmons lit up a cigar as Detective Bryce stormed out the door. He took a couple of puffs and shook his head. He had enough things to worry about. 2 days later, Detective Bryce came up with a working theory. Both victims were found in city streets, not inside somewhere. Whoever committed the crimes must have acted swiftly because there were no witnesses. Both murders happened at night at what were busy roads during the day. He thought about the fastest way the killer could escape the murder scene. After studying his notes, he found that there was a sewer opening just a few feet away at both of the murder scenes. He theorized that the killer must have used the sewer to get away. The next step was to check out the sewer system, but he wasn't going to do that alone. People got lost in New York's historic underground tunnels. He needed a partner and a guide. Back at the station house, he spotted Detective Jimmy Jones, who was recently put on the case with him. "Jimmy, I need to find someone who knows the tunnels and would be willing to serve as a guide for us."
"Us?"
"Yeah, I have a theory how the murder is getting around. Need your help, partner." "Okay, I do happen to know someone who will fit the bill. He'll do anything for money. He lives on the streets. I'll get word out right now." Detective Bryce watched him go. He was 10 years younger than himself, still vigorous and ambitious. He was a good man. The next day, Detective Jimmy pried open the steel cover and, with the help of Louie, their guide, slid it inside. It was after 11 o'clock, and the side street they picked was quiet. Louie went down first, followed by the two detectives. They all had flashlights and were waving them around in different directions. The detectives switched their shoes out for boots. Louie wore his usual black high-top sneakers. Detective Bryce pulled a map from his inside jacket pocket. The three of them had already looked it over before going down. Without a word, he picked a direction and Louie led the way. They went to the sewer opening nearest the last victim. The detectives bent over and studied the ground. Detective Jimmy found the first droplets of blood. They were dried out, but recognizable on the narrow walkway alongside the sewer floor. More followed, and then abruptly stopped. Whatever had been dripping must have been covered up because they lost the trail. They decided to call it a night after taking photos and making notes of where the blood spots were. A forensic team would examine it in the morning. 4 days later, Detective Bryce was sitting at his desk when the forensic report came back. The blood they saw was the same as the victim's. There was no doubt about it now. There was a monster loose in the sewer system. As he considered the report, his phone rang. Another victim. When Detective Bryce got to the scene, police had it roped off. The victim was a woman. She was missing her hands and feet. The pools of blood were still sticky and flies were already buzzing around the body. He looked over a few feet and saw a sewer grate. He was back. The media had a holiday with the sensational murders. They'd attracted national attention since the second murder. The third poured fuel upon the fires of speculation on who would do such a thing. The next day, Louis and the detectives went down the grate near the last murder. A very nervous Louis demanded twice his usual fees and stuck to them like glue. As they came to an intersection of tunnels, something flew out of the shadows and scooped a screaming Louis up like a baby and ran off with him. Both detectives pulled their service revolvers and gave chase. Whatever grabbed Louis must have been incredibly strong. They could hear his cries of terror ahead of them. And then they stopped. When they finally got to Louis, he was missing his hands and feet. His eyes were still open in shock. Detective Bryce stopped and kneeled alongside of him. He was still faintly breathing. His partner had kept the chase up. There was nothing he could do for Louis, but he could help his partner. Holding the flashlight in front of him, he trotted as fast as he could through the foot-deep muck. There were two openings ahead. He stopped in between them and listened. He heard a noise at the same time he was hit from behind, sending him sprawling in the muck. He looked up at the giant pale figure, eerily illuminated by his flashlight on the ground. He was bald and had dead white eyes. The albino horror pulled a hatchet from his rope belt and slowly approached him. Detective Bryce fumbled for his shoulder holster and gun. The thing bent over and brought the hatchet down, lopping off his left foot. He could hear himself screaming in agony when the shots went off. Detective Jimmy was in a firing stance, squeezing off careful shots. Then he fainted. The giant staggered backwards, but managed to stay upright. Detective Jimmy reached down into his partner's coat and grabbed his pistol. The thing was howling in pain and anger. Detective Jimmy fired again. This time the giant went down and stayed there. Later on, Detective Bryce opened his eyes and looked down at his feet. One was missing, but he was alive. He was in a hospital and his wife was at his side. She leaned over and kissed him when she saw he was awake.
"Jimmy,"
he asked. "He's outside. I'll get him for you," she said. A minute later, Detective Jimmy came in with Chief Fitzsimmons.
"How you doing, partner?" Jimmy asked.
"Great. I didn't need that foot anyway. So what was that thing that attacked us?" An awkward silence. "Body wasn't there when we sent a team back down to get it," the chief said.
"Try to look at the bright side. You can retire now."
Detective Bryce looked over at his partner and asked, "So who do you think took the body?" "As it stands, add this tale to the many others about New York's famous underground."
Thanks for joining me tonight for Scary Stories Told in the Dark. All of the stories featured in today's episode were written by Dave Stancliffe. Dave is a retired newspaper editor and publisher, veteran, freelance writer and blogger, currently residing in Bedford, Oregon. Married 43 years, Stancliffe is a self-professed independent thinker with a sense of humor. You can find more of his work on his official blog, asitstands.blog. Or visit his author profile at simplyscarypodcast.com today for more information. If you like what you heard and would like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's episode, which includes two more terrifying tales, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights,
where you can sign up for a season pass and get access to all 24 ad-free extended episodes from this season, or sign up as a patron for just $5 per month and get access to not just my show, but our network's audio archive of hundreds of previous releases, including premium versions of our other shows, such as the Simply Scary Podcast and Horror Hill. Not only that, but you'll be lending your support to this very program and help me continue bringing nightmares to life each and every week. Thank you very much for your support. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories performed by yours truly, Otis Gyre. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyre channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name, and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's OTIS@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?